Hello and welcome to another episode of the Side by Side ATC podcast. I'm your host Tom Haynes, and today we're going to talk about what it's like to work at a center. Last time I talked a little bit about what it's like to work at a tower, and today we're going to talk about what it's like to work at a center. And yes, they are two entirely different beasts, animals, things, whatever you want to call them. But they are very different. They're both air traffic control, but very different. And so, what it's like to work at a center. When I moved from Dallas Love Tower to Fort Worth Center, the people at Dallas Love Tower were very supportive of the move. And they also told me that I would enjoy it because everybody at Fort Worth Center is so laid back that it would fit my personality really, really well. Well, and then I got to Fort Worth Center and started training and started realizing that it wasn't laid back at all. As a matter of fact, it was the exact opposite of laid back. It was very, very detail oriented. And the more I thought about it, the more I understood. It really had to be. When you're working at a tower, there are very few ways to actually have a, what in ATC is called a deal, or an operational error is the official term. You can have a runway incursion. Someone's on the runway when they're not supposed to be, and someone's either landing or taking off. That can happen. You can land on a closed runway. I've seen that happen. There are several ways to have operational errors in the tower, but when you get to the center, oh my, it's ratcheted up, you know, 10, 15, 20 times what it's like at a tower. And not only that, but you're dealing with traffic that you just don't see at most towers. Now, if you go to the ATC 12, now what used to be level 5, but ATC 12 towers, yes, they run a lot of traffic, and it's steady and it's continuous. And that's the thing about the center is, yes, you do have arrival rushes, you have departure rushes, and they're pretty much the same time every day, weather dependent. And I'm going to assume right now that we're not discussing weather impacting the operation, but you have arrival pushes that you can plan for, you can staff for, you know it's coming. And for the most part, you do at a tower as well. So that particular part of it is not a whole lot different. But the normal day at a center is pretty much the same as working at a tower. You come in, you get your pre-duty briefing, you check NOTAMs, notice to airmen, and you get ready to work. And then you go in, the supervisor may or may not have something for you to do before you actually take a position. But, you know, you get ready the same way you would in a tower. And then he assigns you a position, or he tells you to run the break list, and you get to someone who wants a break. Okay, so it's very much like a tower. You do a pre-briefing. You look at the sector. You get as much information as you can without bothering the person that you're giving a break to. Then you tell them that you're ready, and they go through the same checklist. They go through a checklist. It's not the same checklist you have in the center, or in the tower, excuse me. But it's similar, and it does cover everything. And so you go through the checklist, and all the briefings are recorded, or supposed to be. But you go through the briefing, you get all the information, and then you tell the guy that you're relieving, or girl, and you tell them you're ready. Okay, so they stand up, you sit down, you sign in, which signs them off, and then they hang around just to make sure that they haven't forgotten anything, which can happen. We tell stories at work about having gone down to the cafeteria on our break and realized that you forgot something in the briefing. And so you call back to the specialty, and they go, yeah, he already found that out. But so you hang around, and they make sure they haven't forgotten anything, and you start to work. And the specialty that I worked was, we handled the Northeast arrivals into DFW, into the DFW Metroplex. And we handled some of the Northeast departures. And so it was a really good combination of sectors. We had low altitude sectors, which went up to flight level 230, and we had high altitude sectors, which were flight level 240 and above. And we had two of each, two low altitude sectors, two high altitude sectors. And the high altitude sectors were fairly busy. And one was a lot of overflights and some departures, every once in a while some arrivals into DFW, but we would have arrivals into Oklahoma City, arrivals into Tulsa, and departures out of DFW, and then cross-country guys going east to west and west to east. And so it was a really good, fairly standard high-altitude center sector. And then we had our arrival, high altitude arrival sector. And that was a different kind of sector. It involved a lot of vectoring, a lot of sequencing. You would have at least two lines of arrivals going into DFW. And a lot of times they were tied from on each of the different routes that we had. And your job in that sector was to take all those high altitude arrivals and space them out and give roughly 10 miles in trail to the low altitude guy. And so it was a fairly hectic sector. But there again, you had arrival pushes and you knew when they were coming. The only problem is when you're training, you're only working the arrival pushes. And so you are going to get a lot of traffic all day, every day, when you're in training. And we had people that would stay on that sector for hours and hours and hours. And I think I told you in the last episode that the normal time on position without getting a break was no more than 2 hours. And we had guys that, you know, they would get offered a break, they'd turn it down, and because they liked to work the sector. And that's fine. I do believe that after a while, you do need a break, because you just need to get away from using your mind that intensely. It's just not possible to continually do that. Now, the good thing was our pushes normally lasted about 45 minutes to an hour, and then you'd have not a lot of traffic on that sector. And then for about another 45 minutes, and then you'd start getting the next arrival push. And so it was definitely an interesting sector to work. And then the low altitude sectors, we had a fairly standard low altitude sector. We'd handle arrivals into Oklahoma City and Tulsa and departures out of Oklahoma City and Tulsa. We had military airspace in there. We had some refueling, aerial refueling tracks for the military in that sector. And then the other low altitude sector we had was the low altitude arrival sector. And so you're taking 10 miles in trail roughly from the high altitude sector, and you're making sure that by the time they all get down to around 1,000, which is the altitude we would give them to the DFW approach, that they were still 5 miles in trail. And so there is a lot of compression that happens, which means the guys in front are slowing down while the guys in back are still going forward and still going fast. And so you have to get used to using a lot of speed control. Every so often in the low altitude sector, you could use vectors to get to make sure you kept your spacing, but it was a much smaller sector than the high altitude arrival sector, and so you had to be very cautious about using vectors because you just didn't have a whole lot of space. And so you could vector them out for a mile or two, vector them back, and that was about all you could do. And so you're using a lot of speed control. And so it was my specialty was a pretty good mix of sectors. And every so often, the powers that be at the center would want to change things up a little bit and would give us another sector to train on and to work. And so in my time at Fort Worth Center, what started out is especially with four sectors. At one time, we had another low altitude sector that was by us, and then they gave us another low altitude sector. So we worked everything from Monroe, Louisiana, up to Tulsa, Oklahoma, over to Oklahoma City, and then down towards Bonham, Texas, and Texarkana, Texas. And so we had a lot of airspace, and then they gave back the other two low altitude sectors around Monroe and Texarkana, and then they gave us the northbound departure sectors. And that was interesting because I had not worked a true departure sector. And so it took some getting used to. And there were a couple of people that did resign or retire because they just didn't want to work that sector again. And it was another one of the, busy sectors in the center. And so we didn't work the busiest. We didn't work the most complex, but we did work some fairly busy sectors. And so that is the main difference that you're going to see from working a tower to working a center. And then you have the different positions that you have at the center are mainly going to be, radar controllers and what they call the radar associate or the D side. It used to be a lot of strip marking and a lot of stuff like that, and a lot of keeping up with the strips when we use strips. But about a third to halfway through my career at the center, they did away with most of the strips, and we didn't have to do strip marking nearly as much. And so the D-side position became more of trying to see conflictions, trying to see problems that were going to come into the sector before they got to the sector. And you could really influence the sector a lot, some of the sectors a lot, as a D side. Some of the sectors were much more R side, focused. It was really going to be on the radar controller to take care of the sector. And then there were other sectors that the D side could influence quite a bit. And a lot of times, as the D side, you're an extra set of eyes. So you're keeping your attention on the radar and making sure that the radar controller is not missing anything. And so that is a huge difference between the two. Is in the center, you are going to get help when it gets busy. In the towers, not as much. Every once in a while at Love, we would staff a coordinator or position that, you know, would handle coordination with the approach control. But, and then if it gets really busy at the center, they have a handoff position. So they take care of some of the coordination as well. Some controllers wanted the handoff position guy to do the typing while they did the talking and didn't have to worry about typing in altitudes that they were giving and stuff like that. Others wanted them just to, there again, be an extra set of eyes, and they have, you know, three pairs of eyes instead of just one or two. And so there were different ways of working with a handoff. And we didn't work with a handoff a whole lot, but every once in a while, when it got really busy, they would staff the handoff. And then a lot of times, the supervisor would be standing behind the sector, so there's another set of eyes, and there might be another controller that's come in that the soup says, hey, just keep an eye on that sector. And so you can have, you know, four or five, even six people watching one sector that was getting really saturated with traffic. And it didn't happen often, but it does happen. And I will say, working in a center, you get good at making decisions. And not all your decisions are going to be great decisions. The more you work, the more you make decisions, the better your decisions get. But you are going to be making decisions, and a lot of them. And so you work sector, and it may be as the D side for an hour, hour and a half. It may be as an R side, radar side. But then eventually someone comes in and gives you a break. And another major difference between the center and the tower is the center had a cafeteria. The tower, you had to make your own food. You had to come up with your own food. But the center had a cafeteria that was open most of the time that I was there. Not all the time, but most of the time they had some place you could go down and get something to eat, even if it was just a snack or if it was going to be a meal. And they had, you know, quite a few Coke machines and a lot of refrigerators that you could bring food in and have your own food. But the breaks at the center surprised me. When I was training especially, we had a little game room at Fort Worth Center. It had a foosball table in it, and my trainer liked to play foosball. And I was okay at foosball when I got there. I got better through training. But we would take some fairly long breaks, especially when considered or compared against the breaks that I told you last week that you got at the tower, that were very short. The breaks at the center were, I would say, at least 30 minutes long. A lot of them were considerably longer than that. But you go on break, you can read a book. They had a room that had some lazy boy chairs in it, some couches. You could go in there and read. Like I said, we had a game room. Every so often it has some video games in it, a foosball table. And so you could also walk around the facility. It was all fenced in, so, you know, you could get in a little bit of exercise. I think they ended up having a couple of frisbee golf holes around. We finally got them to allow us to hit some golf balls back in the back where we wouldn't break anything. But so it was a decent place to work. I mean, it's the one thing that is very different is when weather impacts an area. And, you know, I said my airspace was Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Bonham, Texas, Texarkana, and that area. You know, so local weather didn't really impact a whole lot. Now, if weather were impacting DFW Airport, then, of course, we would be holding airplanes, and airplanes wouldn't be able to get in. But all the cross-country traffic would still be able to get by. Now, if you ever pay attention to weather, it doesn't always just impact one area or one airport. I've seen lines of weather go from our border with Mexico all the way to the border in Canada. And there may be four or five holes in that line of weather that airplanes can get through. And so you're talking about quite a bit of traffic going east-west and west-to-east, trying to get past that weather and all trying to squeeze in to 3 or 4, maybe 5, 15 to 20 mile holes in the weather. And so that is when it gets to be very, very interesting at the center. And that's when you start to really get creative with solutions to the traffic problems that come up. I talked last time about when weather impacts a tower and an airport, nothing really happens. I mean, everybody pretty much stops. Well, at the center, they can't stop. They're already moving. They're already up in the air. So they've got to go somewhere. You've got to do something with them, whether it's holding arrivals, whether it's deviating around weather. You have to have a solution because those airplanes can't just stop. So it is very different. There's a reason. I think there's a reason they make more money at centers. Generally, they work more traffic. It can vary. I've had days at the center where I did very little. And so it generally, you're going to work more traffic if you work at a center. Fort Worth Center was a really good place to work. I enjoyed my 17 years there. I didn't enjoy the training part, but I was never one that really enjoyed training, and I still don't. I did enjoy training others. I didn't enjoy actually going through the training myself, but I did enjoy training, and I enjoyed trying to get people to learn how to be a better air traffic controller. I was blessed with some incredible instructors and trainers when I was going through my training. It would take too long to give a shout out to all of them, but they made me a better controller. Every facility I went to, I became a better controller. And so I always wanted to give that back. And so that's a little bit of what it's like to be a controller at a center. Last time we talked about a little bit about what it's like to be a controller at a tower. I think next time it'll either be a comparison of the two or just stories from both of them. For those of you who are going through the academy, tower and en route, I was an en route instructor for 5 years. Thought about being a tower instructor, but I knew a couple of them and they said, no, you don't want to do it. Just stay on the en route side. And so I did. And they're different at the academy. They're different. Once you get in the field at your facility, they're different. but they're both incredibly enjoyable careers, incredibly fulfilling careers, incredibly exciting careers. And I could not even begin to try to tell someone not to try for it. So if you're at the academy, good for you. Do not waste this opportunity. It's a beautiful opportunity for a career. And so I talked a little bit about how much I enjoyed being a trainer. I enjoyed my time as an instructor at the academy. It brought back some memories of my time at the academy, but I got to, in some small ways and some larger ways, I got to impact the future controllers. And that's what you are. When you first get to the academy, you're an academy student. By the time you leave the academy, you are an air traffic controller. And no one can tell me you're not. So a lot is going to happen to you while you're at the academy. And it's that fact that a lot's going to happen to you that has made me want to start a coaching program for those of you who are going through the academy. And it's not a tutoring program, because I'll leave the details of what you need to learn to the instructors, to your leads and A-leads, to the instructors in the labs. They are there to give you all the nuts and bolts, all the information that you need to pass. What I want to provide for you is that support, that person that you can go to outside of class, outside of your classmates, that you can go to and you can talk and discuss how things are going. And I can let you know, because I've been there, I can let you know what it's like, what you're going to face, what's coming up, and why you should never, ever, ever quit while you're at the academy. So that's coming up. I'm still just kind of giving you brief little hints about what's coming. It won't be long before we have that up and running. But I would love your input. What would you like, if you're at the academy, what would you like to help you go through this? I have my own ideas of what I want to give to you and what I want to be, how I want to be there for you. But let me know what it is that you would like to help you get through. And you can email me at tomhaines@sidebysideatc.com. You can leave a comment on whichever podcast platform you listen to, but let us know, and I'll keep giving you more information as we get closer and closer to launching it. But until then, thank you again so much for listening to these podcasts, for listening to these episodes. Hope you're getting what you need out of them. I love doing them. And until next time, again, thank you so much. Bye.